Today is Tuesday, June 3rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, President Trump visits the UK amid protest and fanfare.
On behalf of all Americans, I offer a toast to the eternal friendship of our people, the vitality of our nations, and to the long-cherished and truly remarkable reign of Her Majesty the Queen.
The U.S. and Europe prepare to remember D-Day, the day that World War II ended. Also ahead, a famous rapper becomes the first in his genre to become a billionaire. It's all on today's International Edition. U.S. President Donald Trump is in Britain for a visit that included meeting with the royal family. Britain's Queen Elizabeth greeted Trump and his wife Melania after they arrived at Buckingham Palace by helicopter Monday. After a welcoming ceremony that included a 41-gun salute, the Trumps headed inside for lunch with the Queen.
Visits by American presidents always remind us of the close and long-standing friendship between the United Kingdom and the United States.
Monday night included a state dinner, and today President Trump will meet with outgoing Prime Minister Theresa May. His visit comes as Britain is in the midst of political turmoil. May announced last month she'd be resigning after failing to complete Britain's exit from the European Union, but at the luncheon with the Queen, he was all smiles.
We affirm the common values that will unite us long into the future: freedom, sovereignty, self-determination, the rule of law, and reverence for the rights given to us by Almighty God.
Joining us now to discuss Trump's visit is London-based reporter Amy Gutman. Amy, how have things been going so far from your perspective over there?
The visit began actually before Trump even touched down. He started tweeting derogatory remarks about London's mayor Sadiq Khan, calling him a loser, calling him short. I mean, this was really all the best of juvenile name-calling that you can imagine. This is following a long-running feud between the two. Sadiq Khan has never been shy about his feelings about President Trump or his politics, saying that Trump doesn't represent London's values. So this was a classic bullying match. But I mean, I think a lot of people on this side of the pond felt that it was really bad form to do that even before Air Force One had landed. There's a sense of honor and dignity associated with Brit, and particularly when it comes to the royals. There's a difference between celebrity and royalty. And I think that within royal circles, this is exactly the kind of thing that a royal wouldn't dream of doing. They rarely express their true opinions, and they would never dream of insulting their hosts, even though the mayor is not officially a host. He kind of is. And also, we know that Trump has unusually, for a U.S. president, weighed in on domestic politics, suggesting already that Boris Johnson would make a good prime minister. This is another sort of no-no. It's not something that's been done before. It's not something that sitting presidents generally do. Generally, they try to out of each other's domestic business.
And also, I would imagine, because of the fact that this whole Brexit thing has just put Britain in so much turmoil, especially would be something to tread lightly on.
It is something to tread lightly on. Now, fortunately, whether President Trump comes out and endorses Boris Johnson, you know, whether that has a material impact on the final vote. And bear in mind, over here, it's not the general public that will be electing the next leader. It will be members of the party. So who knows whether that has any impact. But meantime, trade is the big topic of discussion. And there was a little bit of a, as the Brits would say, a little bit of a kerfuffle already about that. It looks like it was essentially a misunderstanding, but the UK is very protective of the National Health Service. There's a real fondness and affection for it. Essentially, what had happened was the US ambassador had been interviewed about the opportunities for trade post-Brexit, and the US ambassador had said something like, well, of course, we're aware of the NHS, but when it comes to trade, everything is on the table, including healthcare. This was slightly misconstrued. Some who probably were on high alert for anything offensive coming out of the Trump camp or anyone working for Trump, was a bit oversensitive, taking this to mean that the U.S. wanted to mandate privatization of healthcare in the U.K., which was not at all what was spoken. But trade will be a big part of the discussion during his meetings at number 10 Downing Street with various ministers, as well as a working lunch with Theresa May. Of course, she's a lame duck.
How do you expect that to go, given that Theresa May is just resigned and won't be here for much longer, and it's been sort of a hit or miss with her, with the last time that the president visited saying negative things and then meeting with her and saying positive things? Are people concerned that they don't know what to expect at this point?
I think the best way to answer your question, especially since, yes, we have even heard Trump's derogatory comments and criticism of how Theresa May has handled Brexit, particularly in recent days with her resignation, I think the best way to sum this up is with good old-fashioned British diplomacy. Theresa May is nothing if not diplomatic. She knew what she was signing up for when she announced her resignation date, which was deliberately set for immediately following this visit. So she knew that the best thing for the nation was to put on a brave face, have lunch with someone who maybe is not a perfect match for her because he has been quite rude about her, again, even recently. But she will do it because she knows this is the right thing to do. And meantime, Trump will also be meeting with various ministers at number 10 Downing Street. And that's where I think the real business is going to be done about these potential trade deals.
And I understand that there are already a lot of demonstrations, people gathering in protest of the president's visit, and apparently more to come?
Correct. People have already been standing outside of Buckingham Palace very peacefully with signs saying no Trump or Trump go home. And of course, with his presence at number 10 Downing Street tomorrow, a much more accessible and high visibility location, we're expecting to see bigger demonstrations. And of course, his security detail has really been on high alert over this. In fact, he wanted to take one of these sort of Cinderella like golden horse-drawn carriages, almost like a parade through the center of London. And he was told, no, too much of a security risk. And in fact, he has been taking a helicopter back and forth from North London, where he's staying, which is the residence of the U.S. ambassador, to Buckingham Palace. Now, this is less than 5 miles. It's also usually pretty congested route, but that's not why he's taking the helicopter. The helicopter is really for security purposes.
All right. Well, the president and first lady do plan to attend a ceremony in the naval city of Portsmouth to commemorate D-Day on the final day of his 3-day visit this Wednesday. Nations that took part in the campaign to liberate Europe from Nazi Germany have also been invited to attend. Well, June 6th does mark the 75th anniversary of D-Day, when Allied troops stormed the beaches of Normandy to begin the liberation of Nazi-occupied France. The invasion marked the beginning of the end of World War II. One veteran of Normandy is telling his story to people training to serve in the military so they better understand combat and sacrifice. VOA's Kevin Enix reports.
The Allied invasion of Normandy on June 6, 1944, was the largest seaborne invasion in history. 24,000 airborne troops landed behind the lines during the night, and 156,000 American, British, and Canadian troops stormed 5 beaches at dawn the next morning. 93-year-old George Chiappa was among them, and he's telling his story to future soldiers.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You guys are all Junior ROTC, is that it?
Yes.
Chiappa was on those beaches for over a year.
My job was in graves registration. That's a euphemism for the gathering of dead soldiers, American and German, and seeing that they're buried properly in a temporary grave, in a temporary cemetery.
9,300 people who were killed during that invasion are now permanently buried here at this cemetery near the Normandy coast. And George Chiappa remembers the day all that death wore him down.
I did break down one day, and the lieutenant pulled out his 45 and pointed it at me and said, "You get your ass out there and suck it up." And that's the way it was treated, so I did. And so I worked like a robot around bodies, to try to keep from really getting involved with what you're looking at.
But as bad as it was, when Chiappa came home after the war, he didn't talk about his experiences.
It was, yeah, you didn't want to expose your family to the horrors of what you went through. And not only that, you're one of millions of people that went through the same thing in World War II. You know, and so it's kind of like a so what thing. I mean, all these other people that may have had it worse than you had it, and of course the ones that died, the ones that came home maimed, that are missing limbs.
Surviving World War II veterans like Chiappa are talking to young people who are planning to enter the military to make sure they understand how difficult a life in the military can be.
I want to let these kids know that there's a very high price for freedom.
16 million Americans served in the military during World War II. Of that number, fewer than 500,000 are still alive today. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
Here are some of the stories we are following at voanews.com. Chinese internment camp whistleblower seeks asylum in Sweden. Syrian government bombs a market and ignores Trump's warning. The U.S. House Judiciary Committee will hold the June 10th hearing on the Mueller report. And an unmanned surface preps for transatlantic crossing. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Acting U.S. Secretary of Defense Pat Shanahan met with his South Korean counterpart, Jeong Kyung-do, in Seoul Monday, just weeks after North Korea conducted a short-range missile launch. As VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb reports, both countries are seeking to keep tensions with North Korea lowered despite Pyongyang's recent actions.
1 year ago this month, President Donald Trump shocked the world after meeting with North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un. Suspending large-scale joint U.S. and South Korean military exercises on the Korean Peninsula. Today, American and South Korean defense leaders are keeping joint military exercises there on a smaller scale. And Acting Defense Secretary Pat Shanahan says the year-long change hasn't hurt the U.S. military's ability to fight in the event of a North Korea attack.
I'm confident that we have the readiness that we are required to have, the operational forces and the posture.
A short-range missile launch by North Korea last month threatened the temporary calm on the peninsula. The international community, including the U.S., has labeled the launch a violation of U.N. Security Council resolutions. But President Trump said the move didn't bother him much. Experts say that's because the short-range test is not a top-tier concern for the U.S. Rather, it's a message from Kim, after President Trump walked away from the latest denuclearization talks in Hanoi. Michael O'Hanlon is a defense expert with the Brookings Institution.
North Korea is trying to figure out a way to exert some leverage, to split the United States from South Korea and China, to get Donald Trump's attention, to try to break this impasse in negotiations.
And O'Hanlon warned that if this test fails to get the reaction Kim's looking for from Washington, North Korea could resume nuclear testing or long-range missile testing. Carla Babb, VOA News, Seoul.
Mexico warned Monday that President Donald Trump's threatened new tariff on its exports to the United States would hurt both countries' economies and cause even more Central American migrants to travel through Mexico to reach the United States. Zlatika Hoke reports on this story.
The U.S. state of Texas and Mexico share more than 2,000 kilometers of common border and are connected by international bridges and roads. Their economies depend on a strong trading relationship, Senator John Cornyn of Texas said Monday in Washington.
It's important to remember that any actions that we take to secure our southern border must also keep in mind the important role that Mexico plays in the economy of the United States.
Cornyn said the migration problem is a result of faulty U.S. asylum laws and that the issue needs to be addressed as soon as possible. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said the Trump administration exacerbated the crisis on the U.S. southern border by cutting aid to Central American countries.
It's a completely self-inflicted wound to our national security that makes the problems the president complains about worse, not better.
Meanwhile, a high delegation from Mexico made its case against Trump's tariffs at a press conference in Washington.
Mexico has been working to address the increase of migration, offering the option to apply for refugee status, adapting the legal framework to offer regional work permits for those who choose to stay, or those who seek to work in the southern Mexican states, and also boosting migration control along the southern Mexican border.
Mexican Foreign Minister Marcelo Ebrard argued that without those actions, there would be a quarter of a million more migrants at the U.S. border this year. He said imposing tariffs on Mexican goods and canceling aid programs for Central America would not reduce migration flows, but increase them. Mexico's agriculture minister explained the impact of the tariffs for both sides of the border.
If this tariff is imposed, the impact it would have on agriculture would be around $1.4 billion. This is approximately $3.8 million daily, which would impact both sides of the border, particularly the consumer.
Mexican officials said the United States and Mexico have to hold talks with countries whose people are fleeing, notably El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras, with the goal of reducing the main causes of migration, crime, poverty, and violence. Zlatica Hoc, VOA News, Washington.
And you're listening to International Edition on VOA.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on The Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time.
With David Bandy.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.
VOA's International Edition continues.
And I think it's gonna be a long, long time. Till touchdown brings me round again to find. I'm not the man they think I am at home.
Dexter Fletcher's new movie, Rocket Man. The story of British musician Elton John's path to fame was censored in Russia, where the film's local distributor cut out scenes depicting homosexual and drug use, activity and drug use. John and the filmmakers criticized the move as a sad reflection of the divided world we still live in. That's a quote. But here in the U.S., the film opened on Friday in its entirety. Joining us now is Vegas film critic Jeffrey K. Howard. Tell us about it, Jeff. What'd you think of the film?
It came out last weekend, and this is the biopic of Elton John. And last year, all the buzz was Rami Malek playing Freddie Mercury for the Queen, mm-hmm. Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah.
Now we're getting the big screen treatment for Elton John. Rami Malek played Freddie Mercury in the Queen biopic, Bohemian Rhapsody. Now we have Taron Egerton, who is playing Elton John, his big life story. And there's a couple of things you got to keep in mind about the differences between both films.
Mm-hmm.
And one is Taron Egerton sings all his own songs.
He really?
Yes. And Elton John says, he's quoted saying, he sings it better than I do.
Wow.
So as you're while you're watching this and you're seeing this kid belt out every famous tune you can think of from Elton John, he's giving it his own twist, his own inflection.
Wow.
Right. So not only does he have to sing, then he has to act. He has to portray Elton John. And his home life was miserable. His father never loved him. His mother was bitter towards him. His mother's played by Bryce Dallas Howard. And then it's about him meeting Bernie Taupin, who wrote all his lyrics. You know, that 50-year relationship where it all began, played by Jamie Bell. And the biggest credit has to go to also is Dexter Fletcher, who is the director. He treats this movie like you're watching a Broadway show. These fantasy musical sequences, he transitions from one scene to another with Elton John's music. Unlike Queen's movie, Bohemian Rhapsody, this movie is wall-to-wall Elton John music. All his songs, all played out, fantasy sequences, Dodger Stadium concert scenes. sequences. This is one of my favorite movies of the year. And not only that, I'm a huge Elton John fan. It reminded me all of my childhood, all that emotional connection I had to Goodbye, Yellow Road, Candle in the Wind, Benny and the Jets. It all came flooding back. So I had the best time with this movie. It is a winner on every level. Definitely one of my favorites of the year.
So do you think this one's going to be right up there with Bohemian Rhapsody as far as all the buzz during Oscar time next year?
Oh, absolutely. And while Bohemian Rhapsody got a lot of Oscar buzz, there was a lot of flaws in the movie. People didn't like the structure of the film. And believe it or not, the guy who directed, Dexter Fletcher, who directed Rocketman, was brought in after Bryan Singer was fired off Bohemian Rhapsody. Hmm. So you can see little parts of Bohemian Rhapsody where Dexter Fletcher's genius comes shining through. He knows how to handle a musical. And Bryan Singer, while he's a brilliant director with all the controversy surrounding him, he really didn't know how to handle a big musical. He did it completely different. So this is, yes, definitely. I'm going to remember this movie come award season in the next 6 months, and I am totally satisfied right now if Taron Egerton walked away with Best Actor playing Elton John. At least he's going to be nominated because the movie is so much better than Bohemian Rhapsody.
Do we learn anything new in the film about Elton John that maybe we didn't know before?
Well, you know, it's, I hate to say the word cliche, but that's the story of the 1970s rock and rollers. The drugs, the sex, the craziness, the antics. He had a major alcohol and drug problem, which we all knew. I didn't know he was married at one time. It explores his personal life and his sexuality. It's all up there on screen. So there's many articles about saying what's true and what's not in the movie, and I really care not to read about that. Elton John approved this movie, and if he wants this to be his standalone This Is My Life, then I'm happy with that.
All right, Jeffrey K. Howard, you can find his full video reviews at VegasFilmCritic.com.
Presidents to represent me. I'm out for presidents to represent me.
I'm out for presidents to represent me.
Jay-Z has become the first billionaire rapper. The husband of music superstar Beyoncé has, according to Forbes, now become one of only a handful of billionaires in the world and the first hip-hop artist to get there. Besides his music, Jay-Z has built an empire of other businesses, including real estate, art, liquor, and more. He's also launched his own clothing line, Rocawear, which he sold in 2007, for $200 million.
Reflecting when my man laid up on the uptown high block, you got his side sprayed up. I saw his life slipping. This is a minor setback. You're still in.
And you've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. We thank you very much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jimmy Cook. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Nevada, ha ha, papa. Word life, I dabbled in crazy way. Without rap, I was crazy straight. Partner, I'm still spending money from 88.
Presidents to represent me. I'm out for presidents to represent me. I'm out for presidents to represent me. I'm out for presidents to represent me.
Know what? I make you and your whack mans fold like bad hands, roll like Monopoly. Advance, you're copping me like white crystal. I gross the most at the end of the fiscal year than these could wish to. The dead presidential candidate with the sprinkles in the presidential ice that'll offend you in due time when crime flees my mind. All sneak thieves and player haters can shine. But until then, I keep the trillion cut diamonds shining brilliant. I tell you half the story, the rest you fill it in. Long as the villain win, I spend Japan yen. The 10 major events catch me in the joints. Convince my iguanas is biting. J-A-Y hyphen, controlling, manipulating. I got a good life, man. Pounds and pence, enough dollars make sense. Why you ride the bench? Catch me swinging for the fence. Dead presidents, you know. So be it, the Soviet, the unified steady flow. You already know, you light, I'm heavy row, heavy dough. Mike machete, your flow. Your paper falls slow like confetti. Mine's a steady grow, Betty glow. Pay five in it for blow. Better believe I have 1160 to show. My dough flip like Tycoon. Jay-Z the icon. Maybe you like Dawn. Maybe this crystal's a change of life. Roll with the winners. Heavy spinners like hit records. Rockefeller, don't get it corrected. Perfected from chips. The chicks are scribbling Alexis. Naked without your gun. We taking everything you brung. We caking. You faking, we getting it done. Crime family, well connected, Jay-Z. And you fake thugs is unplugged like MTV. Got MD3, take your treasure, my pleasure. Dead president jowls, politics is you jowl. Bam!
Presidents to represent me. Dead presidents to represent me. Dead presidents to represent me. Dead presidents to represent me. I'm out for 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 dead presidents to represent me.
Hello, this is James Butte, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Or you can call us on 001-202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. That's Daybreak Africa at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 0905 and 2005 UTC, right after the international news.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
It's been 30 years since the government of China violently suppressed pro-democracy demonstrators in Beijing's Tiananmen Square. Pro-democracy protesters, including students, workers, and civil servants, gathered in the capital to demand political change, an end to corruption, and respect for fundamental human rights. We do not know how many people were killed in the violent confrontation, which was followed by a roundup of protest participants. Chinese authorities have tried to expunge the event from China's official history by censoring discussion of what occurred and by making sure no commemorations take place in China. But the world remembers what occurred during those violent days in June 1989. It remembers the iconic photograph taken from a Beijing hotel room of a single young man standing up to a Chinese army tank, a photograph capturing the valor on display in Tiananmen. In an interview, U.S. Deputy Assistant Secretary of State in the Bureau of Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor, Scott Busby, paid tribute to the protesters.
We salute the heroes of the Chinese people who bravely stood up 30 years ago in Tiananmen Square to demand their rights. Their courage has served as an inspiration to future generations calling for freedom and democracy in China and around the world.
Mr. Busby observed that China's human rights practices have not improved since 1989.
There continue to be severe constraints on freedom of expression, freedom of association, freedom of religion in China. And indeed, in recent years, we think there's been a deterioration in respect for human rights rather than an improvement.
Deputy Assistant Secretary Busby urged the government of China to release all those seeking to exercise their human rights, halt the use of arbitrary detention, and reverse counterproductive policies that conflate terrorism with religious and political expression, particularly in the Xinjiang region. China's own constitution stipulates that all power belongs to the people, Mr. Busby added. History has shown that nations are stronger when governments are responsive to their citizens, respect the rule of law, and uphold human rights and fundamental freedoms.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
This is